So, at this point in time, I will stop sharing. And I would like to turn it over to Lawrence, who's our program chair, to introduce the speaker for the night.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And, oh, that's interesting. I get you on full screen, Chris. I guess that's how it goes. Anyways, we were actually, you know, this came about a couple of us, me included, were very interested in Raspberry Pi, and we've been beating the bushes in the local area to get someone to provide us an insight into it. And I think it was Alan that came across Deed's name, and in my brief discussion with Deed, it was found out that he's an old hand at working with computers, including dealing with the old IBMs that we speak of with kindness, though at the time I'm sure it was cursed at. And he has built up quite a repertoire of using Raspberry Pi, and it's very impressive from my perspective, and I suspect that many of us will be we'll be looking at our Christmas wish list a little bit more carefully after Deed's presentation. So with no further ado, I will allow Deed to introduce himself further and continue with the show.
Thank you, Lawrence. Everybody can hear me fine. Lawrence, can you hear me? Good. So I think I'll start. Everybody's looked at my face a little bit, and the picture's on my wall behind me, so I'm going to start sharing my screen at this point. And I'm going to share my whole desktop, which could be interesting. So we'll see what happens here. I'm going to start with this picture here. So you've all seen that, and I thought, what I just, because of, we talked about the Raspberry Pi, the $35 alternative to a 60-year-old million-dollar IBM. I thought I would show you a picture of this device. I worked for about 6 years, not on this particular machine, and no, that is not me, although the hair was about the right length and still is. The machine that we had had two rows like this of large refrigerator-sized racks, and was somewhat less powerful than a really, 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 really cheap cell phone today. Nevertheless, we did lots of stuff with it, and I started my career working on this machine, doing process control, measuring signals, doing calculations on them, sending outputs out, and controlling chemical plants. At the University of Alberta, we were doing pilot scale plants for education and research. And that was how I started in the business. I ended my career teaching a course on Raspberry Pis at Camosun College, which is a junior college in Victoria, British Columbia, a course on the operating system and how to use the general purpose input outputs on the Raspberry Pi. So that was my career, spanned about 50, 60 years roughly. So I thought that was an interesting intro to this device. That, as you could tell, even just the pig iron alone in that IBM 1800 would have cost you more than a Raspberry Pi today. And so this is the Raspberry Pi. Why is it so popular? Cheap, for one thing. It's $35 to $55 for what you see here. This particular one is a Raspberry Pi 4. And if you get 4 gigs of RAM on it, it's going to be $55 US, which translates to about 75, 80 bucks Canadian by the time you get it here. It's really small, about the size of a credit card. And it's really quiet. Mostly it doesn't need a fan, although the Pi 4, because of its horsepower, can get itself into a situation where a fan is helpful. And I always stick heat sinks on the CPU and the memory. What's most interesting, though, and I think what got people involved in this more than, certainly got me involved, more than the fact that it's small and cheap and quiet, is that it exposes the general purpose input-output pins. That's the digital pins that can connect to the real world and thus measure something and output something. And so it takes me back through my whole career back to the IBM 1800, which I thoroughly enjoyed playing with chemical plants and stuff like that and controlling them. And I thought, well, now that I'm retired, I can control my house, and I'm rapidly doing that with various devices that do this very inexpensively. The focus on the Raspberry Pi and its creation was a focus on building and learning as opposed to most other computer systems today. For most people, it's about consumption. Consumption of media, consumption of news, consumption of whatever. Whereas consumption of email, that sort of thing. So that really got me interested because now I could be hands-on again. You can't take your car apart anymore like you could when you were a teenager in the 50s and 60s because there's no usable, serviceable parts in there anymore. So the best you can do is maybe take your lawnmower apart, and that's getting harder. So that really appealed to me, and I think that's what appealed to a lot of people. And the Raspberry Pi Foundation very much pushes this learning through hands-on use of the computer. Huge support. They thought they might sell a million of them if they were really, really lucky, but they were thinking that would have been really weird. By December 2019, a total of 30 million Raspberry Pi devices have been sold. So as you can imagine, there's an awful lot of us playing with these things. So it's huge support. And another thing that's kind of cool, it's really easy to swap the hard drive because the hard drive is just a micro SD card. So shut it down, pull the card out, put a different card in. You've got a different system running, doing something different. So very, very useful. So what I'd like is if you have questions, put them in the chat. And Chris, can you monitor the chat and then speak to me if there's questions?
Yes, I will do so.
Thank you very much. So I really like the idea, by the way, if I say something that goes right over your head and you don't understand it, I spend enough time teaching knowing what that does, and it does it to me. If something goes by, I don't understand it, then I'm thinking about that completely, and I totally lose the rest of the presentation. So if something bothers you, please ask the question, and I'll clarify if I can. Okay, so what's the Raspberry Pi? Let's take a look at this a bit more. Are all those letters coming through okay?
Yes, they're coming through.
Good. So what's here? Let's start with it's a Broadcom quad-core CPU. And somewhere between 1 and 4 gigabytes of memory. And that's a build time choice. You can't change it afterwards. An Ethernet connector. Power over Ethernet, although it requires more hardware if you want to do that. This would make Mark happy because he's very into power over Ethernet. The Ethernet controller. 4 USB ports, 3.0 and 2.0. 4-pole stereo output and composite video port. I have no idea what one might use that for because I've never experimented with it. There's a camera port, and I do have a camera, and I'll try and demo that. 2 HDMI ports. Micro HDMI, but nevertheless HDMI. A USB-C input, and it's strictly used for power. There's no signals on that USB-C. The reason for they went to USB-C is because there's no power. This thing wants, the Pi 4 wants at least 3 amps. And if you stick a whole lot of stuff on the GPIO, which I'll get to up there, you could use more. Micro SD port, you can't see it, it's under the board. A DSi display port, so you can hook up a, not just a HDMI monitor to it, but a dedicated display port. Dual band Wi-Fi, 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz, and an IEEE NAC, pretty much current, and Bluetooth. And then this is the GPIO pins, 40 pins, GPIO header, and you can either connect to them directly. Let's see if, how do I get a picture of my screen back?
I think you would have to stop sharing, but you do show up in a panel at the side if you're the most recent talker.
Yeah, okay, I'm not showing up. So
right now you're showing up for me when I'm not talking.
Oh, okay. All I want to do is say, can you see what I'm showing you on the camera here?
Okay, I can see you when you're the most recent person talking. I don't know if everybody else has the same setup. If you stop sharing, I think you will go full screen.
Okay, so I think I'll just stop sharing for a moment. And
yeah, I see you full screen now.
And then there's these little connectors like this and female end like this that you can use to connect the to the GPIO. And there's several other ways you can do that to connect to the GPIO. And that's pretty much it.
So, Dave, I have a question on this. It goes beyond the Raspberry Pi, but you might know. There's two USB 3 and two USB 2. I've always wondered with computers why they bother with USB 2 ports at all. Why not populate it with four USB 3 ports?
I don't know the answer to that, but almost every computer that I've seen, and I'm going to guess it's probably economics, because as far as I know, the USB 3 is backwards compatible to 2 and 1 and all the way back.
Yeah.
So the only reason that they would probably not do that is just dollars and cents would be my guess.
Okay, thanks.
But I'm guessing. Okay, so Chris, do you see any questions on what I talked about?
No,
so
we just had one comment from somebody. Art Hunter is a member of our group, uses Raspberry Pi computers in his microgrid home project. He seems to recall that the programmer used software called Mosquito. And that's just the comment that was in there. That's all we have so far.
Yeah, Mosquito is a, the acronym escapes me right now, but it's a method for Internet of Things to upload data to a machine. And I've got an example that I will show of that kind of thing. Okay. Now, the links, I'm not going to click on all of them, but I'll just show you what happens when I do. Apparently nothing. There we go. So the links here are just more information throughout this presentation. And by the way, if you want, I should have shown that. If you want to grab that URL there, that's the URL of my presentation. And feel
that
free.
Deck will, we're going to PDF that as well, and it will be available on our website as well.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Okay, and if you want more information, here's the tech specs. You can click on this, and you can get all kinds of information on the speed of these devices, the size of it. So here's the Broadcom chip that's on there, 64-bit system on chip, and rang at its typical speed of 1.5 gigahertz, and that can be overclocked to some extent, although the thing runs fairly hot already, so I'm not sure I'd recommend it. Amount of SD RAM you can put in it, Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, Ethernet, as I already mentioned, the GPIO header, the USB ports, micro HDMI ports, etc. So just about any standard input-output that you want to do and ways of powering this thing are available to you on this simple little board. So if you want to embed this in a box and bring power into it from somewhere else or over the internet, over your internet cable, you wanted to display something on a display port or have a camera watching for animals. I'm working on getting a camera to watch my fish pond, basically looking for raccoons. I'm not sure that raccoons would care that they're on camera, but it might be fun. Okay, so what do you need now? You've got this single board computer. What do you need to make it run? Well, if you want to run it headless, and that means no keyboard, no mouse, no monitor, which you can do, you need a 5-volt power supply, okay? 5 volts, 3 amps, and a USB-C connection to it, and a micro SD card to stick the operating system on. And that's it. And let's see if I can start. I had to. Where did I put? Yeah. So what you're looking at right now here is one of my Raspberry Pis sitting in my on my very messy desk, running VNC, and I'm connected to it. So essentially, it's running headless in this case. It's got a power supply and Wi-Fi back to the world. And if I switch to the other desktop, you can see there it is. Nothing more, nothing less. So that no keyboard, no mouse, no monitor, and yet I still have the ability to do things on it. So that's one way to do it. If you want to do it with a keyboard and mouse and a monitor, you don't want to start playing with networking and all that sort of stuff right off the bat, then a simple little Logitech keyboard with the trackpad there and some form of cheap monitor. The monitor I've got sitting on my desk right now is a, I think, $90 cheap TV I bought from Walmart, but it's got an HDMI, so that's all I need. And it works just fine. And if you wanted to hook it up to something else, you can also watch movies. So you need to add a little bit more. The power supply costs you $10-$15. This keyboard here that I show you is, I think, about $30 roughly, and already mentioned a $100 monitor. And a cable, a micro HDMI cable to the monitor. Case is nice. Here's an example of a case. I hope I should probably stop sharing again, and then you can see there's a case. The case has a camera on the top of it there, and this is a Sonalert buzzer. And why is it there? No particular good reason except that I had one, and I thought, well, what happens if I hook this up to the GPIO pins and turn a GPIO pin on? And it does. It beeps, as you'd expect. Makes a horrible noise. Okay. So if you want to get getting started with this, you've gone down to your local Raspberry Pi store, and or you've gone out, jumped on Amazon. That's where most of mine have come from, is Amazon.ca. And I'll put a plug in for Canakit, because they do a great job of putting together various kits that include power supplies and other things that you might need, and including a bunch of little breadboards and things like that that you can use to play with the GPIO stuff. So you've got it. It just showed up. Your Amazon guy dropped it off in a nice little box by your door, and now what do you do? Well, first you need to get a – if you didn't get an SD card with it that's preloaded with software, then you're going to have to find a copy of Noobs. So you can go to Raspberry Pi's site and get that. And that's the easiest one to work with. I looked up Noobs, and there it is. What is Noobs? New out-of-the-box software. There you go. And Noobs is kind of nice because you don't have to, if you're running Windows, you don't have a device that'll write an image file to a disk or to a micro SD card. You have to go download and find that and then play with it. So Noobs, actually, you just do a copy. You copy everything that's in the Noobs file. You untar it or you unzip it, and then just take the result of that and copy it all over the SD card, shove it into the Raspberry Pi, and the boot loader that's part of the Raspberry Pi goes, oh, look, it's got one of those files on it, and proceeds to take it apart and actually create an image file on the or it takes a while. But it does it.
As I understand it, you can actually get a Raspberry Pi with a micro SD card with an operating system on it and all configured. Am I correct?
That is correct, yeah. You can either do, although the ones I bought from Canakit that have come with the software on a micro SD card, it wasn't configured. So as soon as it already had Noobs installed on the micro SD card, so I didn't have to do that. I just put it in the Pi, booted it up, and it connected a monitor and a power supply and a keyboard. And it then immediately went through on taking Noobs apart and building the image file on the SD card.
Okay, so it might be a simple way for people who are real new to the environment to get started.
That would be the way to go, yeah. If the rest of this stuff that I'm talking about here intimidates you, you can buy the thing with the SD card already done. Or you can holler for help, and there's a bunch of us in the Victoria group that would be more than happy to help. Just send an email.
Alan happened to mention in the chat window, too, that Raspberry Pis can be sourced locally at Unit 9, 190 Colonnade Road, and they have a website. He's posted that into the chat. So if anybody's interested, that might be a good starting point for you as well.
And that's a very good point. Buying locally gets you support from those folks. I buy my stuff from Amazon because on Vancouver Island, there isn't a lot of local. This kind of stuff is few and far between, this kind of support. Vancouver is a different story, but Vancouver is a long way away in terms of time and cost and ferries and things. But yes, buy, if there's a local supplier that can sell you this stuff and support it, by all means. Okay, so what can I do with it? You've got it up, it's out running, what are you going to do? Well, you could use it simply as a PC. Like, you know, it's a computer. If you're running the Raspbian operating system, which is the standard that comes with noobs, you're running a version of Linux. And so as soon as you already know that if you've got a PC, although it's a fairly low-powered one, infinite possibilities arise. So you can simply do this. Okay, so this is looking at the graphical user interface, just like I showed you in this find a picture, any picture. No, not that one. That one. Okay. And I've got three screens set up on this thing, right? Yeah. And that's back to the original. So there's a web browser running there. This particular thing is running an Arduino programmer, the Arduino IDE. And down here is, there's a terminal section running there. So it's a computer. Just use it that way. Program development. It's got a built-in IDE called Thonny for doing Python. So here we go. Print your first Python program. Hello, world. So I've used it extensively to program Arduinos, ESP8266s, or ESP32s. These are all microcontrollers or single board, small microcomputers. The reason I've used the Raspberry Pi to do it rather than one of my desktops or the laptop is that it's really very convenient when I take it and I take an ESP32 or ESP8266 microcontroller, and I control it to look after my fish pond and measure stuff and things like that. And then I need to change the programming on it. It's really convenient to grab the little Raspberry Pi in a box that's in its small case and carry it out to the backyard and plug it in to the ESP8266 and reprogram it. Whereas taking my desktop out there is not that handy. And I can also toss it in my trailer and take it with me camping. And so it's kind of neat. It's a bit slow. I played with my, it's probably 8 years old or more now, desktop, and I stuck the Arduino IDE on it. And I compiled something, and it went so fast I thought it didn't do it as compared to the Pi. So the Pi is slow, but it's faster than I think, so I don't really mind waiting a bit. And it also gives me an excuse to get another cup of coffee. So there's an example. This is a C++-like language that is unique to somewhat unique to the Arduino IDE. I'm not describing what an Arduino is or the ESPs, other than the fact that they're microcontrollers that have, again, GPIO pins that you can do stuff with. I have one lying around here somewhere. There's an ESP8266. The X over the, it's an ESP8266 development board. The X over the CPU indicates it's broken. So I don't mind messing with it like this, and I keep it for this. And the back of it, you can see, has a bunch of pins that you can plug these wires in that I had a moment ago, but I've lost these things in. So you can take and plug these into this. and you can plug the other end into a breadboard. And then you can go find an LED. I had one lying around here, but it's disappeared. And away you go. So that's one another thing you can do with it. Okay, more data. I can run Node-RED to capture data. Node-RED is a system that was designed by IBM, and they've open sourced it since they started out doing it. And it's a way of gathering data from the Internet of Things stuff and organizing it. It's all programmed by dragging this stuff around. So if any of you have ever played with, say, Scratch or some of those other things, it's somewhat similar to that, where you grab here's a timestamp, and so this timestamp runs at a certain time. It makes an HTTP request into this function, okay? And then there's the function outputs to some gauges and things like that. And I'll show you the result of this in a moment. But this is how you program the whole thing. This is all running on a Raspberry Pi that's stuck in the ceiling of my family room. It does some other things. It also goes through and it reads pictures off a USB thumb drive and displays them on a monitor that's stuck on what we euphemistically call in the family room, our family wall, which has pictures of my kids and my parents and my wife and her kids, which are the same as mine, and her parents, and you know, our family. And then it's only so big, so we have this monitor that's bolted to the wall that just scrolls through this couple of thousand photos in there, randomly showing the pictures. And the Raspberry Pi does that as well. So the picture that it shows is this. Okay, one of the pictures, and in a moment I'll see if I can get a live one of these for you, but this is the temperature in my wife's kiln. She's a potter. And so this charts the temperature in, this is a 1 hour chart, a 4 hour chart, and a 40 hour chart. Now, if you look at these numbers there in Celsius, it's clearly not firing anything at this point. This is just measuring ambient temperature. But, I can turn a fall warning on, and I can enter minus numbers for how far it has to fall before I get upset and set off an alarm. And the reason for that is that if you've ever done any pottery, the kiln has a thing called a kiln sitter, which is just a little piece of clay, basically, that at a certain temperature melts, and you can get different ones. And it just holds, and so you put that in there as a fail-safe. And at a certain point, certain temperature, this thing melts, tips over, and opens the contacts on the power. And it would occasionally do that before it was supposed to. So I've got that fall alarm set in there. And because it makes a horrid noise, and my wife can go, oh, my God, and looks at the temperature and says, oh, no, that's fine. It's done. Or, oh, my God, it's starting to fall too soon. And she can rush out and reset it and override that. So that's what that's all about. Now let's see if I can get a... there's a live thing. So this is the temperature on my back deck as we speak. It's 25.19, which, as you can see, is higher than it was yesterday. And here's the kiln, which won't be a whole lot different. Okay. So 1 hour, 4 hours, As you can imagine, measuring these temperatures that a pottery kiln goes to, 1,000 degrees Celsius, we're not using your standard temperature sensor. It's a thermocouple. And thermocouples are extremely noisy devices because they're very, very low powered. And any radio frequency noise around will mess them up. So the funny shapes you're seeing here are due to the fact that I've got a whole lot of software filtering in the device that's measuring this temperature, in the ESP8266. And here's the infamous pond I've talked about that I'm eventually going to stick a camera on so I can watch it. You can do it. I suspect that Zoom uses a lot of bandwidth, which is why it's taking a while for this to show up. There you go. So there's the pond, the temperature of the pond, and the reason I wanted to monitor that, because when it gets below 15 degrees, you don't feed the fish anymore. A temperature in the microcontroller bag, where it's actually a Ziploc bag that holds the microcontroller, and then the number of makeup liters. This is, I've got a float switch in there that says, put some more water in the pond, and it sticks every so often. So the microcontroller will say, no, you can't have more than 2 liters at a time, and it shuts it off. And it actually broke right here, this particular one right here, and it had to shut it off. It tried to put 4 liters in, and as you can see, 240 to 5 to 250, and then I shut it off, and then I allowed it again. We were out camping this morning, and so I allowed it again, and it immediately tried to put some more water in, so I just left it. And when I got home, I found that there was a bunch of goo that had got underneath the little cover on the float switch and gooed it on. So at least I've got an override so that I don't become a new Boeing 747 MAX. Okay, so something else you can do. And all these pictures and graphs, by the way, are brought to you. I talked about ESP 8266, the microcontroller, which is not what this presentation is about, but all of these pictures and graphs are brought to you courtesy of Node-RED running on a Raspberry Pi. Okay. You can control inputs and outputs, which is, of course, the first step to taking over the world, because that's always a useful thing to do. And so here's an example of a couple of wires coming out of a Raspberry Pi into a little breadboard, and there's an LED. And there's a program that, let's see. lscatblink.py. Okay, so there's a little program. It's a Python program. import some libraries, decide which pin we're going to use, and set the pin to an output, and then just create a loop that runs 10 times. Output pin true, 1, sleep for a second, set it to 0, sleep for a second, count 1, do it again. And what's going to happen? That LED is going to blink once a second, 10 times, and then it's going to stop. It's not rocket science by any means, and it's certainly not actually going to take over the world, but it's the first step. And you would be, it's much more fun, at least it was for me when I first did that, than any other computer program I had ever written. And I spent the first half of my career writing code and the second half teaching it. So this is exciting stuff, at least for me. And here's the box this all lives in. We do a course, or we were doing a course, we're talking about how we might be able to do this virtually. but there's the little box I take to the course. It's got an ESP8266 in it, a couple of these little breadboards I talked about, the Raspberry Pi, and there's power that comes from here. And these things are all stuck to the cardboard box, and I can just carry them around, and I can demonstrate what I'm doing. And the course is a hands-on course, so we supply everybody with everything they need to do to measure temperature, measure a switch, turn an LED off and on, and the little breadboards and all that sort of stuff. We don't supply the Pi, but this stuff costs us maybe $5-6, so we just supply that gratis to the folks that are taking the course, and the wires. So, and we've taught it now three years running, both in the fall and the spring, except for 1 year when I took off to Arizona for the winter. Winter, spring, but we don't have a lot of people. We'll have 5 or 6 people show up, but they really get a lot from it. So if anybody wants to come and spend a few weeks in Victoria after this current COVID thing is over, come on out and take our course. So this is the website for that beginner's course. And so we started out the first week talking about the OS and then the flashy LED, the switch, and the temperature. And, of course, you measure, if you think about it, if you've got a switch and you can measure temperature, you can obviously do stuff with that. Okay, and there's the code. That I just showed you. But I just basically showed it to you live on the machine that does that. So you can add a software-defined radio and track aircraft, and I'm doing that. So this is a look at, this is Flight Radar 24 is the software I'm running on the Pi, and it's a Pi 1. It's one of the very original Pis, and I had it lying around doing nothing, so I went and got myself a little software-defined radio USB dongle for, I don't know, it was less than $20. And so there's the aircraft. And what it's doing is it's reading the ADS-B transponder signals from the aircraft. They're gigahertz signals that come from the aircraft. And basically the older ones will talk about, only give you the altitude and what they're squawking. Okay, the newer ones will give you the lat, the long, the altitude, and the squawk. Okay, as well as the ADS-B identity code plus the aircraft call sign. So this information uniquely describes an aircraft in time and space. And as a result, once they get most aircraft with the ADS-B, the new ones, on board, they'll be shutting down primary radars in North America. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Okay, this is a live picture. Okay, I'm actually looking at this live from the ads. So that's what we're seeing right this very instant over Victoria. Okay, or around. I can see about to the south and east. I can see about 50 to 100 nautical miles. Of course, these things are not on the ground, right? To the north, I don't see as far because I've got some really big fir trees to the north of me, and they get in the way of the signals. So that's some real-time data, and that gets fed into Flight Radar's data. And back to, okay, I want you to give me back that. Thank you. And there's a map of what Flight Radar does to, and they consolidate data from a whole lot of people that have these ADS-B receivers, plus information from Transport Canada and the FAA in the States, and build these pictures. But it's kind of fun. You can take pictures. Now, I was streaming some pictures from that Raspberry Pi I showed you earlier, but I don't know that that's going to work particularly well because of the bandwidth issues. I don't know what you see there. Okay, it's something. Let's see if it. Okay.
Yeah, we are seeing things.
Yeah, so now you're looking out at the fairly hot, sunny day. Okay, there I am. There's my wall with pictures on it. And the streaming is actually smoother than this if we didn't have Zoom using up a whole lot of bandwidth. But it does. You can take pictures. And so I could stick this on my pond, but I mean, that you're looking at, you know, about $100 worth of stuff by the time you got that camera and all that together. And what I'm actually looking at, which I'm programming with that Arduino IDE, is this thing, which, see if it'll focus. Kind of. It's what's called, it's an ESP32 CAM. So it's an ESP32, which is another microcontroller with a camera on board. And I've got it to do some very rudimentary things. Quality isn't terribly good. Excuse me. But it works. And it costs $8. So, now you're just looking at my messy desk. Okay. You can attach it to a ham radio, which I've done. And I can't show you a picture of this right now because it went camping. This is in a plexiglass, not plexiglass, but, you know, a box, a storage box. And, underneath this piece of wood is power supply. This is a VHF-UHF ham transceiver. And this is a Raspberry Pi with a what we call a DigiPi hat on top of it, which is made by or designed by a fellow in Blaine, Washington, that I ham there that I've met, and soldered together by my wife. And what it does is it attaches to the radio and can control it and send signals through it. So we can send digital signals through the radio. And the other thing is it can control the radio. And if any of you have ever attempted to program these ham radios, they can be done. You can push the buttons on the front of the thing and you can program them to do the things you want and set up repeater frequencies and things. And it's arcane black art, as far as I can see. So a really cool thing you can do with it is, let me show you. Let's just open up another one here. And uh, This is the thing that I find actually the most useful. I did a presentation on this too for the PieMakers group, but I don't want to go into a lot of detail on it. But this is a program called CHIRP. Don't ask me. It's probably an acronym, but what it is, it's an open source program that is used to program radios. So I've got it. It's in the Raspberry Pi. And so if I need to add a new frequency, this thing just shows up like a spreadsheet. And if I need to add a new repeater, I just put in the frequency and the name, the tone mode, if there is one, the tone frequency, and the frequency offset for the transmit receive. And for those of you that aren't hams, repeaters are stuff that typically live on mountaintops, so that I can reach them with a fairly low-powered radio because they live on mountaintops. And then they will repeat the signal out at a higher power from their mountaintop. And so I get a much larger range. Vancouver Island has a thing called the Island Trunk. And we have about 10 repeaters that run all the way up and down the island and across to the west coast. And when I talk to any one of those repeaters, that signal is sent all the way up and down the island and off to the west coast. So we cover the entire island with ham radio. And everybody asks, so a plug for ham, a quick one. Everybody asks, why ham? You got cell phones, why? Well, when the disaster happens, whatever it may be, there's a very good chance your cell phones will stop working. And your internet will likely stop working because a whole lot of it relies on a lot of infrastructure. All of the, for example, the Island Trunk net all runs off of solar and batteries and does not rely on any normal infrastructure from the community. Under normal circumstances, yes, it charges batteries off the off power lines, most of them do, and et cetera. But they can run for months without having any of the normal infrastructure we're used to seeing. So that's my quick plug. Besides, it's fun. Okay. Something else we did is we ran a series of comparison programming language. So a lot of folks go, so why, what programming language should I program in and why? And so we did Python, C, Bash, which is the command line language in most Linuxes, and PHP, which is, okay, and we just basically went through a six-session or seven-session course on very simple programming of these languages and examples of it, and it was a hands-on. So what we did was we took a Raspberry Pi and we created containers in the Raspberry Pi. That Pi sits on my desk. It's hooked up to an IPv6 internet connection. And every user has a unique IP address on it. And I think we've got 14 or 15 separate people on that Raspberry Pi, each one having a little Alpine Linux operating system all to themselves. And this is all running on a Raspberry Pi 3. Let's see if I can get to that. So the host names of these things are uniquely the person's name. So mine is clearly called Deed. And I can do an ls-l. So this is one of 12 or 14 containers running on this Raspberry Pi, this $35 machine. $45 in US dollars with the power supply. So an example of something you can do with this is I want. Okay. Can you just come down here? So yes, thank you very much. There. Okay. So that server has a web server, or that Alpine Linux container is running a web server. And so as an example of PHP on the course I did, converted miles per gallon. So if anybody wants to know what their miles per gallon is, for some liters per 100 kilometers, because you're an old dinosaur like me, throw out a number for me and I'll plug it in.
35.4.
You don't want to see the answer to that. 8.03 miles per gallon. So, again, this is running on a Raspberry Pi with all kinds of other people, possibly, although I doubt at this instance anybody's logged into them. But it's an example of what you can do with a Raspberry Pi. And this is a full web server.
So did these containers, are they like virtual machines?
You know, yes and no. They appear like virtual machines, and this is not one of my, the containers thing is not one of mine. It's Craig Miller's, who is one of our folks in our group. And he's the expert on this, and the fact that this thing's sitting on my desk and I actually built it is only because he drank copious amounts of coffee and some red wine sitting over my shoulder while we put this together. But to answer your question, yes and no. It appears like a virtual machine, but a virtual machine has usually a virtual operating system of some flavor, which is very minimal, living on top of the hardware, and then it creates virtualization for each one of the machines running on it. And each one of the machines has to have its entire operating system. So, you know, I've got a virtual machine running on my desktop, and or I think it's Oracle's, whatever that one is, VirtualBox. And I've got a Linux, couple of Linuxes, and a Windows 7 running on it. That's my most latest Windows machine I've got, which apparently is at end of life now. So, but each one of those virtual machines has to have the entire operating system, whereas a container is typically built to run a shared operating system. So in this particular case, we built it for Alpine Linux, and we could get Craig to do a presentation in more detail or something if you want. But and so the operating system, each container is not duplicating everything, if you follow me.
So it's a more efficient use of the resources, presumably.
Exactly. It's more efficient. It's a lot lighter. I doubt very much, although I'm sure people have tried to actually get, you know, some sort of real virtual operating system running on a Raspberry Pi, but it would be hard. Whereas Alpine Linux is designed to be very lightweight, and it shows up a whole lot in Docker containers. But Craig, who is our container expert, is also our networking expert, and Docker doesn't play nice with Internet Protocol version 4, IPv4, so he doesn't like it. But LXC plays nice with IPv6. So, okay, so those are the things you can do. How do you do it? Well, you either learn the command line interface, which if you want to play with Linux, is a really good idea. And if you want to play with Linux and you don't want to commit one of your desktops or laptops to Linux, go buy yourself a Raspberry Pi and start playing, because it's cheap, it's effective, and you're not going to do any damage to something that you wish was doing something else. Okay, so you can play with the command line interface. So this is from the beginner's course on some of the basic command line interface stuff. And when I say command line interface, if you're Windows people, you probably haven't done it much, but I'm talking PowerShell or DOS shell. Or you can use the graphical user interface and the GUI. And bottom line, it's just like Windows. You know, the interface is different. Some of the things are in a different place, and different Linuxes have the things in different places yet again. But the bottom line is they are pretty much transparent, you know, it's form follows function if you play with the idea of architecture. It's got to do certain things, so it's got to be a certain way. And so once you get used to the fact that the graphical user interface is a wee bit different, then you're not so panicky about it.
Well, certainly I would think that the whole idea of doing it on Raspberry Pi makes it much more attractive for somebody who's a little bit squeamish about it. As you say, you're not expending a great deal of resources to get up and running. And if something goes horribly wrong, the worst thing you're out is, you know, possibly $55 US, which is not too bad for experimentation.
Yeah, you can break it, but it's like any computer, you have to work pretty hard to break it. You're more likely to break the software in your SD card, and then you just reformat it and do it again. Although I have actually broken them, such that I couldn't reformat it. So you say damn and throw $8 away and go buy another one. So some of the things that are on it, you know, there's some fritzing is kind of nice if you want to draw schematic diagrams if you're interested in that. Of course, it's got your standard, it's got an SD card copier, which brilliantly actually will copy the running operating system SD card to another SD card. And it's don't ask me how it does it effectively, but it does, and I haven't seen it break yet. There's some programming stuff. Fritzing, again, is a schematic drawing thing, Arduino IDE. Scratch, anybody want to play with Scratch? Flying Python, these are all things that come with. Well, Fritzing I added, but it was just an apt install Fritzing. Okay, so things you can do. It's got your standard file browser, file manager that will probably be here in a moment. Nope, wants a double click up there. Okay, so no, it didn't. I just didn't have enough patience. So there's your file manager. Looks familiar. If you don't like to look at it that way, you can look at it that way. And that's it. I'm done. So hopefully there's a bunch of questions.
Well, right now we don't have any questions, so a reminder that folks to put it into there. What I'll do actually right now is I can get to a mute all, which, and I'll allow participants to unmute themselves. So I'll say yes. And so Dee, you'll probably get muted again. Everybody is able to unmute themselves now. So if you have any question, you can do it audio or you can continue to use the chat window. The last thing that we have in the chat window is Dennis Therrien posted in the link to the Colonnade Store's 8 gigabyte model. And so if you are interested in getting into this, you could pick up that URL in the chat window. And with that, I will open it up to anybody who wants to unmute themselves to ask a question or make a comment, or I will continue to monitor the chat.
Well, while we're waiting, yes, there is an 8 gigabyte model. That came out after I put this presentation together, and I totally forgot about that. So the base model of the Raspberry Pi 4 is now 2 gigabytes, so it goes 248.
Wow, that's it's $149.99. So $150 Canadian will get you the 8 gig model at the Colonnade Cable Shop.
Is that Chris? Is that with the power supply and stuff, or just the bare board?
I'm just looking at the URL. It has power. And it says a good quality 2.5 amp power supply can be used if downstream USB peripherals consume less than 500 milliamp in total. So it looks like it doesn't include power supply.
Eddie, that BioPi operation offers bare boards and a whole raft of different kits. So there's all kinds of different stuff there.
So they do package kits as well, Alan?
Yes, kits and accessories and everything you want, I think, for a Pi.
Okay.
I would say that I'm totally impressed. A lot of this is over my head. I'm wearing this for quite some time, but I'm more enticed at this point. And this is one of our better meetings ever. So, Dade, thanks so much for and Lawrence for arranging this. I'm totally enthusiastic and optimistic, and there's so much I don't understand. I want to learn more, and just your backyard's impressive, but I'm thrilled. A great evening. Thank you much, Mottawa.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions or comments?
Indeed. What's the minimum size of SD card you need to run the OS, and what size will it support?
Minimum is 8. I typically use 16 or 32 for mine. I think it will support 128, but don't quote me on that. I know it'll support 64 because I've done that.
So 64 would give you considerable room to install additional applications and things like that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I think we've got 32 in that container Pi, and I'm pretty sure it's only about half full.
That's very good.
And you've got a ton of USB ports, so I think a lot of people run it as a NAS device with multiple hard drives hooked into it.
Yes. In fact, I've got, I run a virtual server that's in, I think it's in Toronto. I know it's somewhere in Canada, the company that I'm buying this machine from, this virtual machine. And I back it up every night using a program that just backs up the differences. And I back it up using a Raspberry Pi that sits on my filing cabinet, and it's got a USB spinning hard drive on it, and it sits there just doing that happily. It's kind of interesting. I need to do this. I need to create this backup, and so I had three or four old Linux boxes that I was no longer using, and I grabbed one out and said, I'll install some software on here and back up to the hard drive that's on there, and it gave me some grief. And as I'm doing this, I went, why don't I just shove a USB hard drive into onto the port on the on a Raspberry Pi and do that. And that particular Raspberry Pi is the first one I actually put together, and it sits in my library, measuring temperature and humidity, and posts that information up on the web on my server, so that it will send me an alarm message if it changes too much, if I'm away from home, and I, you know, all of a sudden humidity goes nuts, I can go, hey, get one of my kids to go over and take a look and see if the water tank blew up or whatever. So it's doing nothing. And I thought, well, it can do this too, and it does quite nicely. So,
yeah,
it's definitely USB ports are usable for sure.
What I found was interesting in your discussion and just reviewing the various options locally is that unlike a lot of computer systems, having a more powerful Pi, Raspberry Pi, doesn't necessarily mean a more efficient one. As you pointed out, you have various Raspberry Pis that are built for the right function. And if you don't need to have too much power, but the function will still work without a fan and the additional power to utilize that fan, then why bother? So it puts an interesting perspective on overall computing wants and desires, I guess is the thing to say. You really have to find the right Raspberry Pi to fulfill the function that you want it to do.
Yeah, I don't think I'd try and do 3D modeling with it. But
right.
I'm not doing 3D modeling, right?
Yeah, so. No. My wife hates this comment. It's very much fit to purpose. And, you know, you buy the right unit to fulfill the purpose you have intended for it, not just throw a humongous piece of power on it, knowing that it will just do it and you can move on, which is a lot of what we do with computers nowadays. You know?
Well, yeah, and because they become, even the, you know, high-powered ones become relatively inexpensive.
Exactly.
You tend to go, okay, well, let's buy something that has a huge amount of power just in case.
Yeah.
So,
Dee, do you have a Raspberry Pi that keeps track of all your Raspberry Pis?
No. No, I actually have to stop and think about it from time to time. I've got, I don't know, on my desk right now, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Not all of them belong to me. Some of them belong to the Fit Firemakers group. And because they're relatively inexpensive, my wife doesn't yell at me very much when I buy another one.
Just a little question regarding the monitor. If I have an old monitor, I think VGA type, it would not work for that. I would need to have one that has a HDMI plug on it, I imagine.
You either have to have an HDMI plug, or you've got to get an HDMI to VGA converter, which is doable, because I excuse me, I back before COVID locked us up at home, we used to do meetings at Camosun College, and although all of their overhead, you know, their projectors are HDMI, their audiovisual folks in their infinite wisdom did not bring the HDMI out down to the, you know, the lecture thing where the person is lecturing from. So I bought a little dongle for like $20 that is a HDMI to VGA converter, and it works just fine.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Amazon Canada right now, and you can get them as cheap as $13, it looks like. Okay. Now, you might have to do a further conversion, because that might be to a full-size HDMI. You might have to get a full-size HDMI to micro HDMI dongle and so forth. But it looks like, yeah, for well under $20, you should be able to get something that will do the trick for you.
Yeah. So if you, you know, if you've got a bunch of monitors lying around, you don't probably want to clutter your world up with another one, even a cheap one. So,
thank you.
Yeah.
Do we have any other questions? Everybody rushing to get their order for their Raspberry Pi?
So Amazon has some very interesting kits.
I wonder if there is some kind of user group in Ottawa that people can meet after the COVID-19 is over and have a little hands-on trial with people in Ottawa. Does anybody know if there's such a thing here in Ottawa?
Well, I wonder. I'm totally impressed and unified that these smart folks in British Columbia, so can't we get together as a unified group? I mean, there's folks around, it's hard, smarter than me, but I'm impressed. I had a great evening, and thanks for all. I don't catch it all, but let's go national.
I just did a Google on Raspberry Pi User Group Ottawa, and there's a lot comes up. There's an Ottawa Raspberry Pi User Group, or group at Ottawa Pi Group. I presume that that's a Twitter handle. It's a group of Raspberry Pi tinkers, makers excited to share about the Raspberry Pi. There's meetup.com has Raspberry Pi groups in Ottawa, computer programming groups in Ottawa, including some Raspberry Pi users in Orleans. So, yeah, it looks like there's definitely some activity around.
This is good. I mean, I don't think there would be any complaints with any of the people from your group joining us on our Saturday morning meetings. And I can certainly ask Craig or Mark to send the information to you. But
that would be great. We could get it put into our newsletter as well. A little notice that if anybody's interested, that they could partake in it.
Mark, are you still there? Or are you playing with your air conditioner?
Mark's there,
but he's not listening.
Yeah. Well, his computer's there, I guess.
If you can find one locally, that's probably better, because when this COVID thing's over, then you can actually meet face-to-face, drink coffee, and poke at things. But it's interesting, when I was in Phoenix 2 winters ago, I spent a month down there, and I went looking for a Raspberry Pi group, and didn't find one, and I was amazed. Because Phoenix has got a population of 4 million people. We've got less than 400,000 here in the Victoria area. So,
Deed. I was in the powder room.
Ah. So the question was, Mark, seeing as you're running the Jitsi server, can you think of any reason why folks from the Ottawa PC users group can't join our Raspberry Pi meeting this morning?
I can think of one right away. The locality geo block I have for IP addresses. So for those folks in Ottawa who would like to connect to us, you'd have to send me your IP address or Deed, or get in touch with Deed or myself, and I would have to unblock you at the firewall here. I do this firewall block of just the BC area simply because there are a lot of people in other parts of the world hammering on systems all the time, and it's just simpler to just geo-restrict who can talk to my servers.
Yeah, that sounds good. So if you can get us information on that, we'd be certainly happy to disseminate the information within the OPCG. And yeah, if people are interested, they could join up with you folks. That'd be much appreciated. I have one other comment that came into the chat from Mark. One of the most sold kits was to use the Pi for making up a streaming box using Kodi software. So that'd be doing streaming media to your TV.
There's a lot of people that do that. I don't, because I don't even watch TV if I can avoid it. Every so often my wife makes popcorn and says, come watch this movie with me. And I go, yeah, okay.
And in terms of video boxes like Kodi and whatnot, you're going to have to temper your expectations somewhat. I tried at least two or three times over the course of 5 years to get the Pi to reliably run video at a decent high resolution and without dropping frames, and it was always difficult. So the quality, you might not be able to get what you think you should get. So in terms of video streaming like that, keep in mind that the Pi might not be powerful enough depending on what model you get. Nowadays it might be a little better. My experience hasn't been that great though. Sorry to be a downer on that, but that was
networking.
I tried three times.
Sorry, Mark.
I'm done.
Networking has improved on the Pi 4. It's got better networking, and that may make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
that is
true.
Not an application I've played with. Chris, do you have my email address, and Lawrence has my email address.
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Yeah, feel free to publish that.
Okay, that'd be great. Thanks.
Yeah. To your group, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
not to the general
world.
You know, no parliamentarians, right?
Okay. One last call for questions or comments. And I think we'll wrap it up. So I'll hand it back to Lawrence to sign us off on this part of the meeting. Don't go away. We will have a few announcements after this and then the Q&A as well. I'll turn it back over to Lawrence.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dee. It was very informative. And I think I'm looking at my next Christmas gift, the smart robot car tank with built-in Raspberry Pi. That sounds like a perfect Christmas gift for the boy that never grows up. So, but thank you very much. This was a great presentation. And you did mention that you had another presentation up your sleeve. Can you just describe that a bit more? And that way we maybe whet our appetites for you coming back at some point.
Well, one of the things I was thinking of is possibly doing, if your group is interested in microcontrollers, is to talk more about those ESP8266 things and the Internet of Things, or maybe possibly talk more about how the Node-RED thing interfaces with them.
Okay. Well,
so if there's interest in that, that's getting pretty hardware-ish though, and so it's, you know, hard to tell whether there's interest there.
There's probably interest in like the smart home type stuff. I think lots of people are interested in those kind of technologies.
Say that again, Helen.
The smart home technologies.
The smart home stuff, yeah.
Automate things.
Yeah. I mean, I'm doing a fair bit of stuff that would be considered smart home, but none of it using the off-the-shelf products, because to be perfectly honest with you, I don't trust Google and Amazon and the other folks that, because everything I say, they're listening to. And I used to run an ISP for a while, and I had root access to all the servers, including all the mail servers, and which meant I could read anybody's mail. I didn't. But I don't know that other people are as honorable as me. And So that's kind of why my Internet of Things and smart home stuff is kind of homebrew, which means to some extent it's fairly kludgy, but it's fun.
Okay, well, thanks, Pete. And just as a token of appreciation for your time and effort, we have this evening a little bit later, there will be a gift card winging its way electronically to you as a thank you. And really enjoyed the presentation and be glad to have you give another presentation in the future.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I really enjoyed putting it together and doing it, and I appreciate the opportunity to do it. And I would appreciate the opportunity to do something else. So kick around some ideas with your group and then throw them at me and see if there's something I can do. Or maybe wonderful. Somebody else in our group.
Yeah, wonderful. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, just a couple of announcements we have before we go to our break and then to Q&A. First off, I'd like to lead off with, I hope everybody noticed in the last issue of the newsletter, I wrote an article about Alan's contributions to the group over the years, and I'm going to embarrass them even further. The board has decided that a gift card will be winging its way to Alan in appreciation, a very small token of appreciation for all of the work that he has done. So, yes, I see Lawrence clapping, a round of applause for Alan. And thank you very much, Alan, for all you've done for the group. I know that all the members have really, really appreciated it.
Well, Chris, I think there's other people who have done quite a bit themselves, including you, for one.
Oh, I've already been amply rewarded multiple times. It's fun. Okay, another announcement. We are going to be having elections coming up before very long, so there will be a notice in the newsletter about that if you're interested in running for the board. Keep that in mind. You can talk to any of the existing board members about what's entailed. You can attend one of our board members to get a feeling for what we actually do, and encourage anybody who's interested at all to get more involved with the actual running of the group. Notice that Zoom will be the way that we're going to be doing things for the foreseeable future, it looks like. Any change in approach on that of going back to in-person meetings will be announced well in advance in the newsletter, on the announcement list message, and in any meetings that come up, we'll talk about any changes of approach that we're going to take. We will have Q&A after the break. So we'll take a break for 5 minutes. Everybody can go off and cook their wings and pour their beers. So we'll take a 5-minute break, and then we'll come back. We do have probably a good hour's worth of material for the Q&A. We have some questions that came in late into the queue, which is great, and we have a couple of shares that are available as well if we run out of questions and answers. If you have any other questions, by all means, you'll have an opportunity to ask them during the Q&A session. And so let's take a 5-minute break. So I've got it just on coming on to 9, so we'll start Q&A at 5 after 9.